It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. Last week, we talked about how judges end up serving on the circuit court in Maryland. And we're going to expand on that conversation today. In the 8th Circuit, which serves the city of Baltimore, there are 33 circuit court judges, all of whom have been appointed by a governor after being recommended by a nonpartisan commission. After a year or so, they are required to run in what's known as a retention election for a term of 15 years. 6 of these sitting judges will appear on the April 26 primary ballot. And by the way, the judges will appear on both the Democratic and Republican primary ballots. 4 of the 6 sitting judges were appointed by then-Governor Martin O'Malley in 2014. They are Shannon Avery, Michael DiPietro, Karen Chaya Friedman, and Cynthia Jones. Audrea Carrion and Wanda Keys Heard were appointed in 1999 by then-Governor Paris Glendening. They are running for a second 15-year term. These 6 sitting judges are running together as a group, although they are not identified on the ballot as being the sitting judges. 2 other candidates will also appear on that ballot. Todd Oppenheim is a public defender, and James Kraft is currently a member of the Baltimore City Council. They are running on their own, as is their right. They have not been appointed by the governor. I spoke with Mr. Oppenheim and Mr. Kraft last week. This morning, I'm pleased to welcome 2 of the sitting judges to the program, Judge Shannon Avery and Judge Cynthia Jones. Welcome to you both. Thank you so
much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Judge Jones, what does it mean to run as a group? Shouldn't voters decide on each of you as an individual jurist?
Well, they will get to make a decision about us as individuals. When we're out in the community, the good thing about being out in the community is they get to meet us. We get to talk about what we've done as individuals, and we're running because we're currently the individuals who actually have the job, and that's the distinction. They're free to go on our website, look at our individual profiles about what we've done in the public and what we've done personally in the community, but we run together because we're the people who already have the job.
And Judge Avery, some folks have compared voters choosing judges as to be like people choosing the Orioles draft, you know, on their own instead of relying on a major league scout. I mean, how are voters supposed to know whether you or anybody else is qualified to be a judge?
Well, I have to answer that in 2 ways, like a good lawyer. I will say that most people really do not know who we are because we're not politicians and we are not out politicking in the community as well we should not be. But when it comes time for the election process, we are out in the community. Our professional and personal qualifications are public. They are on our website. You can easily look us up on any state website and find out where we went to school, what our primary areas of practice are, what our community involvement is. Essentially, anything you want to know about us has been published, and we have been out in the community talking about it. So our qualifications are available for anyone who wants to be an informed voter and make an individual assessment. But for those people who may not seek out that detailed information about each one of us, they can rest assured that all 6 of us sitting judges on this ticket went through a rigorous scrutiny through the 10 to 12 different bar associations and legal advocacy groups. We were found to be qualified by the nonpartisan nominating commission, and we were investigated by the governor before we ever were appointed to the bench. And of course, we've been sitting on the bench doing our jobs, the 4 of us for 2 years, the other 2 of us for almost 17 years at this point. So whether you want to look at us from the point of our individual qualifications, which that is all available to voters, or whether you want to just go with what's commonly called the sitting judge principle, either way, voters can be assured that we are qualified both professionally and personally for the job.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. That's Judge Shannon Avery. She's here with us along with Judge Cynthia Jones in studio talking about the primary election on April 26, in which they are 2 of the 6 sitting judges who will be on the ballot. So, Judge Jones, how do you feel about having to run for office?
I like it. Only because it's not that it's easy, but I like the process. I don't believe in buying into one part of the process and not buying into the other part of the process. As a prosecutor...
The one part being that you were appointed and the second part being that you have to be elected to stay in the job.
Absolutely. And anybody who knew me as a prosecutor in the city knew that, you know, if the jury trial process is what we buy into, I can't be dissatisfied when the jury makes a decision that I don't necessarily agree with. So I look at it the same way. And it's also a joy to get out in the community because most of our work gets done in the courtroom. A lot of times we hear from voters, hey, you know, when I get into the booth and I say I have to vote for judges, I feel very uncomfortable because I don't know who you guys are. But after talking to them, what they tell us is, I'm so glad you came to our community meeting, and now I feel like I have more information. And the other thing is, they have information that they can now explore on their own.
And Judge Avery, I mean, I've talked to folks in the legal community, including a former professor of both of yours, a guy named Mortimer Sellers, Tim Sellers, who was on the show last week, who advises countries who are like doing their constitutions and stuff. And he says it's a bad idea to elect judges, that the appointment process is enough, that we don't need to add on to it the electoral process. And the folks in the legal community that I've talked to, in addition to Tim, say, look, judges should be accountable to the law, not accountable to voters. I mean, how do you see the distinction? Are you accountable to voters if they're voting for you?
Well, indeed we are in Maryland. And I think that what Professor Sellers described on the show last week was very interesting. And he also pointed out in Maryland that we have a hybrid system. It's not just appointment and it's not just election. So a little bit of context. In Maryland, if you're appointed to the district court bench, you get confirmed by the Maryland Senate. If you are appointed to one of the two appellate courts, then there is a retention election where it's just up or down, yes or no. The circuit court is essentially, once you're appointed to it, you get confirmed by the voters. And that's just, it's just a different way of doing things. And I think it has a lot of value. I don't believe that it is for us to say whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. So I will say that I find a lot of value, as Judge Jones just said, in being in the community and listening and going into community organizations and seeing the really wonderful work that so many people in our city are doing, observing that, listening, and describing our jobs as well has been a really rewarding exchange
for all
of us.
I can see how you would enjoy getting that feedback from, you know, people in the community, but I wonder, Judge Jones, what are you able to do? What information do you need to give to voters to inform their decision? I mean, obviously, we can go to the website, we can read your bio, where you went to school, what you, you know, the legal work you did before. But if you were a voter, how would you decide?
Well, I was a voter.
Because you are a voter.
Right. When I moved to Baltimore from Brooklyn, New York, I was surprised to see that we were going to be responsible for voting for judges. And I got that through the League of Women Voters candidate profile. So I made it a point to go to a forum and listen to the judges and hear what they had to say. And as a matter of fact, one of the judges that I replaced was one of the judges who was running that year. Mm-hmm. But I think what's helpful to our constituents is the fact that they know how we become judges in the first place, which is completely foreign to them. It would be unless they're part of the legal community.
If you're not in the legal business, right.
And I think that's helpful to know that we go through a vetting process, that we've taken the time out of our careers to apply for the bench, that when we apply for the bench, we're not coming off the street per se, but we have really rich legal careers. I mean, most people who apply to the bench on the circuit court have almost 20 years to 30 years of experience before they apply for the circuit court. So we're able to discuss our positions. I'm able to share that I started off in Cherry Hill. Judge Avery is able to share that when she was in law school, she established the LGBT Bar Association there. That's very important information to the community that they don't get unless they go on the website or we get out there.
But this brings up an interesting thing. When you talk about discussing your positions, why is it that judges have positions? I mean, there's a whole thing in the commentary to the standards that says, you know, you're not allowed essentially to tip your hand as to how you might vote. I mean, the example they give, if a judge were to say every deadbeat dad should get a taste of a jail cell, or somebody says the first-time drunk driver should deserve a sentencing break, obviously that's showing a proclivity of how you would adjudicate a case.
Right. We don't discuss our
positions. So what positions do you have? You're in a tough spot
We are in a tough spot. But what we do is we actually talk about not just the process, right, the judiciary, but how important it is for us not to have an opinion or a position, right? Because when they come, either as jurors or as litigants or family members of people who are facing some type of litigation, that they want us to make our decisions purely on the facts, the evidence presented, and the law. I mean, once you explain it, they understand it. But if they just hear sound bites like, oh, the judges won't discuss their positions, you don't want us to have positions.
Right, of course.
You want it to be pure.
Yeah, and Judge Avery, I mean, you're elected to 15-year terms. And one of the things that happens is that, you know, public opinion changes. I mean, I'm thinking about your colleagues who were appointed in 1999. Governor O'Malley, who was then the mayor of Baltimore, was, you know, broken windows policing and tough on crime. And now we're talking 15, 20 years later about the over-incarceration that we have in this state and throughout the country. I mean, literally political tastes change. An LGBT advocate, you know, 20 years ago was not nearly as well received as an LGBT advocate is received now. So even responding to voters' proclivities or voters' preferences changes, obviously, through the course of your term.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that when I made the decision to be out as a lesbian in 1990, that I never imagined that this many years later, which I'm afraid to actually count in my mind right now, that I would be touting that as a value in the diversity of our sitting judge ticket. You know, back then it was courageous, and I'm proud of the work that we did back in those days. And now in this city that respects diversity and voters who want to see the diverse communities in which they live represented in their institutions, like the judiciary, I'm very proud to proclaim that.
Mm-hmm.
Things do change and issues change. However, the one thing that voters and residents always want is a consistency in their courts. So if you have judges who are allowed to apply their own opinions and the shifting winds in court, there's no predictability for the litigants. And that is patently unfair to them. And it contravenes the purpose of law, quite frankly. So we as judges, I'll tell you what we do stand for. We stand for fairness. We stand for equality. And we stand for impartiality. And what that means is that we should not be heard to express our own personal opinions about the existing law. Because if you don't like the existing law, as a citizen,
change the law.
Change the law. Go to Annapolis.
Right. Go
to city council.
And don't rely on the judges to change the law.
Exactly. Obviously. That would be the wrong avenue.
Right, right. Judge Jones, do you find during this electoral season that you need to, for example, recuse yourself from certain cases? I mean, Mr. Oppenheim, for example, is a public defender. I mean, are you hearing cases in which he's involved? I mean, and how do you choose whose cases you'll recuse yourself from and which ones you can hear while there's voting and campaigning going on?
Actually, five of the six of us are assigned to the civil docket, so that's not an issue. Judge Hurd is assigned to the criminal docket. But one of the things that we've shared with the community with a regard to recusal is the fact that we're really concerned about what impact that issue might have on the clients that Mr. Oppenheim represents, and that we want that client to believe that he's getting a fair and impartial trial in the courtroom and that it would be appropriate under these circumstances not to put his clients in a position to say, well, you know, they made that decision not based on the facts, the law, and the evidence, but they made that decision mm-hmm. because you are my attorney.
How about money? You have to raise money to run a campaign. I got a very nice brochure with all of your pictures on it just yesterday. That costs money because I'm not the only one you sent it to. I know. You're soliciting money from people in the legal community. They'll have cases in front of you. I mean, Judge Avery, how do you handle that?
That's one of the less pleasant aspects of running for election, but it is necessary. We can't get our message out to voters without being able to communicate
with
them.
How do you handle it if there are people who are litigants in cases that you're presiding over?
So the civil rules and our ethical rules require us to disclose to the parties whether there has been a donation. And I will say, if we know there's been a donation, because we don't scan our donor lists. So the only way we really know if you've given to our campaign is if we've seen you at an event or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So what happens is that in the civil cases, the lawyers come in and you say, lawyer one, I need to inform you that lawyer two has made a generous campaign donation to the sitting judges. And what happens is frequently then we turn to lawyer two and we say, lawyer two, lawyer one has made a generous donation campaign. And then you walk away and you let them discuss it with their clients and among themselves. And
so disclosure is the key.
Full disclosure.
And that was the point that Professor Sellers made, if you recall. He talked about one of the benefits of having a 15-year term is some of that
You're
evaporates
not doing this all
over
the time.
Time.
Sure.
But in other jurisdictions where they have short terms,
that's
you know, you're always,
you're always
working on your
cycle. Okay.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I very much appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Judge Shannon Avery and Judge Cynthia Jones are running to retain their seats on the 8th Circuit, which serves the city of Baltimore. They are running as a group with the four other sitting judges who are on next month's ballot: Audrey Carrion, Michael DePietro, Karen Chaya Friedman, and Wanda Keys Heard. If you are voting in Baltimore, you'll find two other names on the ballot as well: Todd Oppenheim, who's been a public defender in Baltimore for the past 11 years, and James Kraft. He's retiring as a city councilman representing the 1st District. Coming up a little later today on Maryland Morning, a conversation with the singer-songwriter Ellen Cherry. She'll be dropping her new CD tomorrow night at the Creative Alliance, and she's here with a preview. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.